You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're leading the movement for Peyton Manning to change his name to Peyton Crewing. And if you know what we're talking about, you would be with me, your host, Justin Abelzeski, and the rest of us in Discord, where William has been keeping us up to date with the Manning or manned versus crewing or crewed terminology for future space flights. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, returning from paternity leave, because we are not discriminatory here in the midside, Daniel T. Richards.
I like how in the outline you have from our nation's capable.
That is definitely a Freudian slip, right?
A Freudian slip and not true. Not capable here, nations.
I think for anyone who knows me on a personal level, I think maybe I'm being indoctrinated.
Maybe. Yeah. Regardless, it's good to be back on the 2-week anniversary of the birth of my son is when we're recording this. So all is well here, as I continually tell people who ask, so far being a father exactly meets expectations. There is literally no surprise, no difference from what I thought it would be. It is exactly as I pictured it, imagined it, and everyone told me it would be. So
I'm going to tell Isaac one day that his 2-week performance review was meets expectations and that he needed to step up his game.
That's right. That's right.
I have a question for you, though. Like, have you had his privilege checked yet? I mean, he's already 2 weeks old.
I had an awesome privilege checking moment with the pediatrician, saving this story for the show. So he's like 2 days old, 3 days old. We take him to the pediatrician, as you're supposed to, so nothing wrong. And one of the things you're supposed to watch for with babies is jaundice, where they're not peeing enough, basically. They're not getting rid of waste out of their body. They can turn yellow. So I go to the doctor.
Question. How would you tell if your baby turned yellow?
So here's. Don't step on my story. Don't step on my story.
Oh, I just Dr. Drew'd all over your punchline,
all over the place. You're going to need some tissues because you just Dr. Drew'd hard all over my story. I'm going to need to clean that up. So go to the pediatrician. She walks in and she's checking the baby out. Everything looks fine. About to leave. And she goes, are there any questions? And you ever heard that phrase, doorknob question, where the doctor's literally, like, her hand's on the doorknob, and you're like, yeah, one thing. And I did that, and Fiza didn't know I was going to ask, and so I said, I'm concerned our son is jaundiced because he looks yellow to me. And the doctor looks at me, looks at the child, looks at me, looks at my wife, looks at me, looks at the child, looks at my wife. The doctor is a black woman, by the way. She'd mention that. And she goes, he's not jaundiced. He's Persian. It's like, oh my God, I'm baby racist. Oh God. And the doctor is just so, and Fiza's looking at me like, have you not met me? I'm your wife. It's like, oh my God. So fucking embarrassing. So I checked his privilege. He's fine. He's Persian. All is good.
Oh. The only thing that would have made that story better is if the doctor was Asian.
Yeah, that would have been better. But black woman, hard to beat that. Asian better, but alas. He's doing great. Isaac's wonderful. He's holding his head up already, which is weird for a baby. And he's making eye contact, which is also weird for a baby, sort of like the anti-autistic baby at the moment.
Well, how do you not make eye contact with those eyes?
I know. He's 90% eyes. We've been calling him Isaac. Get it? Dad joke.
Ha.
And yeah, he's great. Holds my finger. It's awesome. You know, the one other insight about being a father, anyone who's a father out there will probably identify with this feeling. You get this feeling a lot. That's the exact kind of feeling you get when you work on a file on your computer for hours, and then it freezes and you lose all of that work. parenting thus far is that feeling over and over and over and over again, which is simply, all right, I've fed him, I've changed him, I've swaddled him, I've put a hat on him, he's in the crib, the moment my hands take away from him, he has explosive diarrhea. Now I have to unswaddle him, unclothe him, take the hat off, undiaper, clean him, now he's awake and needs to be fed. So you basically go through that process ad infinitum. That's fatherhood.
I'm confused as to why the hat has to come on and off in regards to the amount
he
of shitting.
Eat right with the hat on? I don't know. Developing idiosyncrasies early? Like, he's annoyed.
But you said he's not autistic, right?
He's annoyed when the hat is on when he's eating, but he won't sleep with the hat off. So hat on when sleeping, hat off when feeding. So, there you go. Fatherhood, in a nutshell. Everything you expect it to be.
Also joining us, from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forego his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, I got to fight a little bit of virtue signaling this week on Twitter. Apparently you're not supposed to refer to the two new spacecraft that will carry people to the ISS that are going to be tested this fall and early next year. The one by SpaceX is called the Dragon capsule. You're not supposed to refer to those as manned aircraft or spacecraft, since that's what they are. You're that has apparently misogynistic intentions. You're supposed to use crewed, and so I had to remind people that the word crew is from French, and it's from the masculine side of French. It's not the feminine version. And it means a band of soldiers serving as reinforcements. So I reminded them that I'm taking them, anyone who calls it a crewed spacecraft, to mean that they're in favor of Trump's Space Force. And so, as you can imagine, that didn't go over very well. But just trying to poke some fun at using logic and reason where there is none.
Well, I'm confused, though, about one thing. Besides the fact that there's no logic or reason. There's a masculine side of anything French?
I'm no linguist, so I wouldn't be able to answer you on that one.
I was wondering when these languages like French, Spanish, Italian, the Romance languages would be under attack for having gendered everything. Those languages, I figured eventually that would come, and like, today is the day. Yes, one small step for crew, one giant leap for Hugh crew kind. So.
Well, and when we're talking about coming under attack for your race, and we're talking about white privilege and not being able to know what race your own baby is, I think that's a perfect segue to welcome Daniel back to the show with the news with Daniel T. Richards.
There was so much farce while I was out of the Midside office, but we wanted to kick it off here with a good one, which is that the New York Times decided to hire a racist, except that they're saying she's not a racist, and that go away. It's basically what they're saying. So the New York Times' newest editorial hire has a history of racist tweets against white people, reports the Daily Caller and a million other sites. The New York Times announced on Wednesday that they hired Sarah Jiang to join their editorial board. Jiang? I have no idea. Previously wrote for The Verge, indeed, and authored The Internet of Garbage, a book about online harassment and free speech. Shortly after Jiang's hire, Twitter users unearthed old tweets in which she expressed an extreme distaste for white people. Quote, "Dumbass effing white people marking up the internet with their opinions like dogs pissing on fire hydrants," she tweeted in 2014. Adorable. Another tweet reads, "Oh man, it's kind of sick how much joy I get from being cruel to old white men." Hilarious. She had such other wonderful tweets as hashtag cancel white people. Or, one, white men are bull. S. Two, no one cares about women. Three, you can threaten anyone on the internet except cops. And then my personal favorite, this one, quote, "Are white people genetically predisposed to burn faster in the sun, thus logically being only fit to live underground like groveling goblins?" Excellent. So when people pointed this out to the New York Times, they, of course, immediately fired her because they would never have a racist working for their editorial board. Oh, no, wait, they stood by her and said that she was using the tactics of her online harassers, which is an interesting defense of racism. Justin, on one hand, you have a racist now working, like an avowed outright racist working on the editorial board of the New York Times. On the other hand, outrage culture. How do we balance these two? What the hell is going on here?
Well, this is actually a perfect continuation from the episode you missed last week where we, William and I, discussed the whole James Gunn thing, where something similar was done with him, right? They went in the past and they dug up all of his tweets about pedophilia, where they, those were supposed to be jokes as well, right? Yeah. Oh, those are jokes. And, you know, even though there's a huge pattern of it, he shouldn't be held accountable for them. And there are people still to this day trying to get James Gunn rehired. I mean, in my Instagram feed, something from Sci-Fi popped up about the voice of fandom. And it was this long letter from a fan about why James Gunn should be rehired. And I don't think we ever came to a definitive conclusion last week.
No.
Because it's tough to. Because in these cases, right, we've seen two extreme cases in the last couple weeks, the last month or so. With the James Gunn case, I don't necessarily have a problem with the outrage mob. I think that's a good use of the outrage mob. Because if there's one type of person we should be able to get rid of, it's pedophiles. And the same thing here. This is a good use of the outrage mob. You should be able to do that. And in a way, isn't any boycott an outrage mob? Wasn't the civil rights movement an outrage mob? So there's a good use of the outrage mob. The problem is it's gone too far, so now people aren't taking it seriously. The outrage mob has become the boy who cried wolf, to the point now that the New York Times just ignored this outrage. I mean, their response, right? You said that their response was she's using the tactics of her oppressors. What was the terminology?
I can read it for you if you want. Quickly, here's the statement from the New York Times. We hired Sarah Jong because of the exceptional work she has done covering the internet and technology at a range of respected publications. Her journalism and the fact that she is a young Asian woman have made her a subject of frequent online harassment. For a period of time, that's important. For a period of time, she responded to that harassment by imitating the rhetoric of her harassers. She sees now that this approach only served to feed the vitriol that we too often see on social media. She regrets it, and the Time does not condone it. We had candid conversations with Sarah as part of our thorough vetting process, which included a review of her social media history. She understands that this type of rhetoric is not acceptable at the Times, and we are confident that she will be an important voice for the editorial board moving forward. That was the statement.
Yeah, for a period, we can ignore that, because that basically means she's going to stop now that we've hired her.
Well,
that's what that means.
Well, I pointed that out because for a period of time indicates to me some limited amount of time. And, you know, to be obtuse about it, for a period of time is 33 years or 33 seconds. But to me, it means it's limited. But as people have pointed out repeatedly, her racist tweets go back to like 2013. How much of a period of time, quote unquote, was she, quote, imitating her harassers?
Well, that's the entire point I'm making
years,
by saying what I said.
Seems like more, less like a limited time and more like, I don't know, her entire adult life.
Right. But that's how they're spinning it. They're spinning it. Oh, the period of time was 2013 till now and she's stopping. So therefore it's a period of time. Do you see what I'm saying? That it's spin?
Yeah, it's major spin.
Yeah. And I linked you to a thread. I linked both of you to a thread on Twitter that was all of her tweets. Somebody went through and found, just searched like white or white people and found all of them. And I read the first year and it was literally like reading a person descending into madness. Like the first few tweets were definitely, she was trying to be funny and you could see that she was just failing because she's not a funny person. But the way she continued with it, it's the same argument I used about James Gunn. If this is what you're thinking about and tweeting about, that is shaping your psychology. In the same way you shape your body by the repeated motions you do, you shape your mind by the repeated thoughts you do. And you could see that if you read through her history of tweets.
Yes.
But regardless of that, the thing about the New York Times response is, I'm going to summarize it for you in one statement. Ready for it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not racist. You're racist.
Yeah.
That was their reply.
Absolutely. And we'll get into that broader discussion.
And that's the world we're living in now.
We'll get into that broader discussion.
That's the world we're living in.
I'm going to bring in William here. William.
Yes.
What if her tweet had been this? Do you think she would have still been hired? What if her tweet had been, Are Jews genetically predisposed to burn faster in the sun, thus logically being only fit to live underground like groveling goblins? Think she would still be hired by the New York Times?
Well, we kind of know the answer to that already. It ties in to what Candace Owens did on Twitter yesterday. She replaced white people with Jewish people and tweeted, and I'm quoting here, just so I can be taken out of context at a later date. Jewish people are bullshit, like dogs pissing on fire hydrants. Cancel Jewish people. Are Jewish people genetically disposed to burn faster in the sun? The above statements are from New York Times editor Sarah Young. I simply swapped out the word white for Jewish. She was then suspended from Twitter for 12 hours for hate speech.
Well,
did you see the argument people were using about that? People were saying that culturally the context now is much worse, so of course somebody's going to be suspended for tweets now where they wouldn't have been suspended for tweets in the past.
But the New York Times and other places tell me, foreshadowing, that that minorities can't be racist. Asian people can't be racist, so black people can't be racist either. So why would this be hate speech?
Indeed, the Daily Dots, to tie this into a second story related to this, reminded us this week that you can't be racist against white people. Indeed, this author, whose name is Tiffany Drayton, points out that it's the alt-right this week, all up in arms about Sarah Jong and the New York Times hire, claiming that it's the alt-right who's saying things like, Sarah Jong is a racist and all racism is racism, no matter what. And she wants to point out, for instance, definitions for the word racism can lead to the belief, this is from the article, that it is a matter that is simply a matter of prejudice. For example, dictionary.com defines the word as, quote, prejudice, discrimination, or antagonism directed against someone of a different race based on the belief that one's own race is superior. But, Ms. Drayton reminds us, a deeper dive into the meaning of racism and what it means to be a racist reveals a more complex truth. True racism in America requires power. Ah, enter Marxism. Here we go. Per the Sociology of Racism published by Harvard University, argument by authority here, racism is, quote, an ideology of racial domination in which the presumed biological or cultural superiority of one or more racial groups is used to justify or prescribe the inferior treatment or social positions of other racial groups. Now, before we continue with this article, Justin, is there anything in that, even in that definition of racism, which to me is a weird way around the term, even in that definition of racism, isn't what Sarah Jong, isn't what she's tweeting racist?
I mean, I don't know. You'd have to reread the definition of racism because none of that made any fucking sense.
An ideology of racial domination in which the presumed biological or cultural superiority of one or more racial groups is used to justify or prescribe the inferior treatment of social positions of other racial groups. Hashtag cancel white people.
Yeah, so they would say no because of the domination. I mean, that all they did was fancy it up and make it sound obtuse because of the power aspect of it. And that's when I stopped listening, because again, this is something I've mentioned on the show as I've dealt with this since undergrad. They were trying to smuggle that into my classes in undergrad, and I laughed at them in my philosophy classes, saying that racism is only racism if it's power. Okay, I'm going to say something that's even more extreme than the typical definition of racism. Racism is judging someone solely based on their race, positive or negative. If you look at somebody and you go, oh man, you must be really good at basketball because they're black, even if that's not hatred and that's trying to give them a compliment, that's still racist, because you're judging them as a group based on their skin color rather than who they are as an individual person. And that's what racism is. Racism is terrible because it's collectivism based upon something an individual cannot control. Something that he or she, yes, he or she, is born with.
Yeah.
They are just, with this definition and making it about power, perpetuating the worst thing about racism, which is why it's racist. And that's what white people are trying to say, but they don't have the terminology because they're thinking in the collectivized terms.
There's with more, this power there's more, bullshit. Yeah, there's more. The power stuff is even worse, right? Because we can't judge individual power, right? Like this whatever her name is, Jung, however you say her name, she is now in a position of power. She's on the editorial board at the New York Times. She's one of the most powerful people in media now. How can we say it's not about power? Oh, that's right. We can't judge her as an individual. We have to look at her and see that she's a minority. She's an Asian.
Right, because it's the aggregate power of your group.
Exactly. It's not your individual power. Exactly. So it's even worse.
Which makes it even worse. Yep. Because she can, right, exactly, because she can do whatever she wants. Exactly. So,
this is wild.
Imagine if a black woman became president. Oprah becomes president. She would basically have carte blanche to do whatever she wants.
You get free healthcare, and you get free healthcare. You get free healthcare.
Although, to be fair, if she did that, I would have been a lot more okay with it with the way Obama did it. You know, everyone doing her meme of you all get free healthcare is a lot better than you, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor.
Lies. Yeah. Also, I like how we are throwing around the term minority, and I try not to do that. Korean? What does minority mean anymore? Minority simply means not white, right? Yep.
It's just not white.
Yes.
Asians are not a minority. Yeah. I hate to tell anyone. They are the majority of the planet.
I would like to be clear that I did not refer to the Asian girl as a minority. I live in California. They are the majority. Thank you.
They are the majority in the world, by the way. So
that's true.
Anyway. This whole domination thing, this Daily Dot article continues if it wasn't vomitous enough. Quote, in order for a racial group to dominate another, that requires power. Anyone knowledgeable about America's history knows and understands that the most powerful group has always been and remains white people.
And will always be.
And will always be. Forever and ever. Amen. From your mouth to God's ears.
We're always going to be in power? So why are we having discussions now?
We're always going to be the fall guy, right? Like, yes. There's nothing there is nothing that can ever erase the original sin of slavery in this country.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, that's the other point Daniel just made, right? We're not looking at like minority based on the entire global, the global world, right? The global civilization, the global population. Well, it's the same thing if you look at the history of the world. Like, Africa? Like, are we acting like America is the only country in the world that ever had slavery and like oppressed people? Like,
what about Irish slaves?
Asia?
The Irish were enslaved.
Well, I mean, nobody wants to talk about that. How about the building of the fucking railroad in America where the Irish came over and got shit on?
I mean, it's the oppressor Olympics, right? It's just that white people are so far behind now in their oppressor language, but they'll catch up. Don't worry. The point here being, I think that it's just this whole power-unpower dynamic is a Marxist, it's a smuggled-in Marxist concept. Having just reread the Communist Platform, I was shocked by how modern it is, like how much of it would be taken very seriously at either the Democratic or Republican political conventions in 2018 or 2020. And it's entirely Marxist, and it's set up as a false dichotomy in order to take things away from people who have earned and to give them to people who have not earned. That is what the entire Marxist structure is set up to do, and we need to call it out for that constantly. It is not about equality. It is not about justice. It's about taking things away, be it money, position, property, tangible, intangible, taking things away from people who have earned them and giving them away to people who have not earned them. It is a philosophy of envy, and it's going to rip this country apart and destroy it, just as it has in every other country where it's been enacted. Welcome back. It's good to be back. Yeah, ranting.
Yeah, you saved up a big rant. I love it.
I did. Should we move on?
Well, that's what happens when you're talking to a baby all day.
Indeed, yeah. Although I did give a multi-hour lecture on Aristotle and the history of rhetoric, so that was fun.
To the baby? Man, you starting him young. Well, I have a question for you guys on this story. So if I read this quote, since I'm not a quote-unquote minority, does it mean that this quote is now racist if I read it? I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Is that racist. Now racist, if said
that
by
is
a white
racist.
Person?
Well, I think it's racist as said by King. The obsession over skin color, they would say, is, and being judged by your character is a racist notion. because we should be judging people based on their skin color if their skin color is white.
And lest we think this is all new, I mean, I looked it up because I too couldn't remember the exact quote, but Ayn Rand talked about this in The Age of Envy. She talks about how today racism is regarded as a crime if practiced by a majority, but as an inalienable right if practiced by a minority. And, yeah. And that's what we're seeing here. It is everyone but the bad group's job. It's okay for them to be racist. It's better than okay. It's virtuous for them to be racist.
Yes.
Well, it's the same thing in sports, right? So if you don't win and then you cheat to win, or the officials are on your side to win, when that happens for your first title or whatever, everyone's like, yay, it's okay. It's just everything's even now because they finally got theirs after all the years of being screwed, because there's the assumption that the people who got to the top only got there by cheating or having the refs on their side. But then if you have a repeated history of winning, suddenly it all becomes tarnished, and using the snowplow in the 70s then becomes cheating, and they start making rules about that in the year 2018. That was a very specific reference that I don't even know if Daniel picked up.
It's the when they unearthed the lines on the field, the Patriots, with the snowplow.
Right, with the snowplow. Yeah. And the NFL just made a rule this offseason that if any grounds crew helps the team by doing that, it's like a fine or a penalty or something. Yeah. I don't remember what the punishment is, but that's because they went back now and they're saying, oh, well, that was cheating because there's a history of winning. But in the beginning, when the Tuck rule happened on the way to the first Super Bowl, nobody cared.
Right.
People only cared when three titles later. And it's the same thing here. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Well, Lord willing, white people will all be oppressed, and then we'll eventually start to bring down minorities as being the oppressor and the power lusters in the culture, and it'll all be cyclical, and Victor Vatanzel will be sitting in a chair somewhere cackling. So,
well, you just said the perfect transition, though, into the next story, because that's actually what's going on.
I'm Latina, and I find Rihanna's skinny brows problematic.
That's
a headline. That's just not my not my personal feelings.
Man,
that actually could be because
child.
You are.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you have one child, and all of a sudden you become trans.
What is it? Latinx is what they say now.
Latinat. I like that one.
Yeah, Latinat. That's it. Yeah.
But yes. Yeah, so this is an article in Marie Claire. It starts off like this: "Quote: I got my eyebrows threaded for the first time when I was 12 years old." Ooh, who cares? Okay, these stories are weird to me. As I walked out of the salon admiring my new skinny brows, my mother stared at me and said, "They gave you chola brows." She gasped, horrified, before immediately making me swear to never thread them that thin again. Apparently at that time, Mexican-Americans, especially in Los Angeles, were getting pencil-thin eyebrows if they were the female member of a gang. And so the author continues, quote, "So when I saw Rihanna on the cover of British Vogue this week with a set of ultra-skinny brows, my immediate reaction was, wait, WTF? Why is Rihanna wearing chola brows? Considering it was highly unlikely that Rihanna had suddenly joined a gang, and seeing as the Caribbean singer wasn't exactly raised on the streets of East LA, my Mexican-American heart was deeply confused and deeply annoyed." The author goes on to talk about how this is, I don't know, some form of cultural appropriation or something or other, appropriating gang culture. Is this not old news at this point? And is sort of just, and I think the entire point of the article is undercut by one paragraph, right? Where she says, "I understand that skinny brows were not created or exclusively owned by the Latinx community. They also have roots in South African culture, in Roaring Twenties fashion, in the Harlem Renaissance community, and I'm sure they can be found in many other subsections of the world too." And that's my question to you, which is, when are we going to finally get off this cultural appropriation train to nowhere?
When we stop caring about things as stupid as eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
Could you guys please explain to me about something?
No.
I have never in my life thought about eyebrows before like the last few months. I don't understand it. Like, I've never been like, have you ever heard of a man being like, man, I'd really like to fuck her, but her eyebrows are terrible. Have you ever heard that? in your life.
Substitute her with ever? Him, and it's every gay friend I have. But other than that.
Really?
No. One I can think of in particular, but.
It's just guys like don't care about it, but women care about eyebrows so much. At my new job, there's this girl who like pencils or paints on her eyebrows every day, and I just want to be like, how can you waste that much time every fucking morning? I want to wake up in the morning and do as little as possible before I have to get to work so I can sleep for as long as possible.
It's a very Adam Carolla insensitive thing that I find hilarious where he goes, you want to know why women make 70 cents to the dollar? All that time they spend on hair and makeup, men spend studying and working. So I find that
it's
funny.
True. Eyebrows are completely irrelevant. Why are they so important that you would write an article? Who gives a fuck what Rihanna's eyebrows look like? We're looking at the rest of Rihanna, okay? Look, it's a perfect example. I said this when I saw Ocean's 8. There's one scene in Ocean's 8 where Rihanna's got all these dreads, but she comes out in this like red dress, which like hugs all her curves perfectly. And I was just like, holy shit. And my girlfriend was like, yeah, you think she looks good, right? I was like, yeah, she looks good. And I was like, I could leave the hair, but... Yeah, she looks really good. Because I don't care. I didn't care what her hair looked like. She could have been bald at that point. Right. It doesn't matter.
Justin's response to this entire article was, Rihanna has eyebrows?
No shit. I know, that's literally what I looked. That was the first time in my life I had looked at Rihanna's eyebrows. I'm not even lying.
Well, William, as a not straight male, do you have any thoughts about Rihanna's eyebrows and cultural appropriation?
I have honestly given her eyebrows no thought. In general, I've given her no thought, but it is, it's so weird that...
Did you, wait, William, did you think about her umbrella ever, though?
No, I have not.
I don't know what that's in reference to, just to be clear.
Oh, man.
You've never heard her song Umbrella or the all-time low cover of Umbrella?
I honestly have no idea what you're talking about.
All right, that's your homework.
No.
My homework is to listen to crap music. Yeah,
don't subject your ears to it. Yeah, is this just another example though of the left eating their own? I mean, there's nothing that this leads to. I think you already pointed that out, but it's just we're just going to keep pointing out frivolous things until everyone has oppressed everyone or has stolen culture from everyone, which is hilarious because culture is shared. That's what it is. It's like one key component of it is that it shares and morphs as it moves through a civilization. Like they're trying to say that that's evil, and it's really coming down to saying any culture is evil, right?
Well, imagine the work it would take, Justin, not just to do one's eyebrows in the morning when considering cultural appropriation, but to literally live life if you had to consider whether or not what you do, wear, watch, how you act, what you eat, what you drink, how you move, what you say is some form of appropriation. If you had to open up your dictionary of appropriation and look up every single thing you did in order to exist to see if it was appropriation or not, and then how many things would that rule out from your life? For instance, as I often joke, since Aristotle invented logic, it is cultural appropriation for anyone outside of the Greek community to use logic, and therefore it should be abandoned, and the left is trying very hard.
Yeah, but the Greeks are white, so that doesn't matter. Like you're.
Yeah, it has to be. Right.
And I don't have to imagine, Daniel. I live in California, okay? I experience that every day. No, but in all seriousness, with the California point, like. When I came here, I had already been softened because I lived in the South and I learned how to be, you know, more Southern hospitality and everything. And I picked that up and I was genuinely polite in a way I'd never been before. But then I came out here and I had to learn how to be even more conciliatory because of the way people are out here. So, yeah, that is you see that with the way the California culture is, where it's both everyone is very deferent to each other, but they're also very avoidant of each other because they don't want conflicts.
Be a deferential, but yeah.
Yes, thank you. I always defer.
Take the wind. Yes.
No, I mean, it's just... I forgot what I was going to say. William, go ahead.
Oh, that's all I have to say. I don't have anything to say about Rihanna's skinny brows.
That's all.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. That reminds me because you said Rihanna. It was something you said, William. So, William, I imagine that there's a big board somewhere in like each of these newsrooms or whatever, like BuzzFeed, Marie Claire, Cosmopolitan, Vice, and they have all the celebrities up there. and they X them out when they've said how they were oppressive or bad. And like, everyone liked Rihanna, right? Even if like you didn't like her music, you still weren't like Dan, you never hated Rihanna, right? William, you never hated Rihanna. You're just like, no. Oh, that's Rihanna.
I couldn't have picked Rihanna out of a lineup of human beings for this story.
Right. Exactly. Actually, my girlfriend just muttered to herself, Dan probably doesn't even know who Rihanna is. So,
what do you think of Rihanna? But I don't think of her.
Right, exactly. Mm. But that's my point. Is like, she was like the rare pop culture figure who was like, you're either like, oh yeah, Rihanna, she's cool, or you just didn't know who she was. But now they're actually going after her. So I really believe they have a board where it's like, who do we go after next?
Perhaps she's not virtue signaled enough. Is that why this is coming?
Well, I would think getting beaten up by Chris Brown would make it so she doesn't have to virtue signal. Like, if you're the victim of horrendous domestic abuse, like, doesn't you win the oppressor Olympics at that point?
It buys you like a year or two, but that's it, really. After that, you got to start signaling, man. Or the oppressed becomes the oppressor. Yeah. Speaking of oppressors, over 1,000 people have downloaded plans for 3D printed assault rifles. I love that. It's hilarious. Okay, so more than 1,000 people.
That's a poorly written headline, by the way.
It's a horrible, horrible headline from the New York Post. What do you expect?
Wouldn't it be for 3D printable assault rifles? Like, for 3D printed assumes they're already printed. It's just, don't get me started.
Come on now.
And they're not.
As a member of the editorial board of the Midside, there is no such thing as an assault rifle. So you shouldn't even use the term.
No, I'm not using the term. I'm reading their retarded headline.
Yeah.
So here's the story. More than 1,000 people have already downloaded plans to make AR-style 3D-printed guns, despite a court agreement barring access until Wednesday, officials said. The Office of Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro sent out a press release on Monday announcing the downloads. Quote, the digital firearms company Defense Distributed had promised that on August 1, the age of the downloadable gun formally begins, said Shapiro's office. Today, the defendants claimed in court that they began distributing gun files even earlier, on Friday. By Sunday, 1,000 people had already downloaded 3D plans for AR-15 semi-automatic assault rifles. I like to say it in that voice every time. Josh Blackman, a lawyer for the company, confirmed Monday that more than 1,000 people had gotten their hands on the weapons information, but he refused to admit that it was all downloaded between Friday and Sunday. Quote, this is a free speech case. This isn't a gun case, he told CNN. One state cannot censor the speech of a citizen in another state. End quote. Justin, if it takes 28 weeks to 3D print a chess set, how long do you think it takes to 3D print a gun? That's an irreverent question, but it's a way for you to launch into whatever rant you want on this story.
Well, I liked it because it assumes that this whole 3D gun thing is now part of the 28 days, 28 weeks franchise.
Yes.
So 28 years later, somebody finally prints the weapon that will end the zombie apocalypse.
Yep.
Is what I just heard.
There you go. It takes a little longer. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, so this is something I've talked about before on this show. Like, this is all just overtures. This is all just foreshadowing to them banning 3D printers. Because once 3D printers exist and then get even better, then they can't allow people to own it. Because then that stops the approach to government we have nowadays. And the approach to government we have nowadays is, I believe it's negative rights. Daniel, correct me on this, but...
Well,
America was founded on the idea that if it's not outlawed, you can do it. But now, unless you have permission, you can't. You have to have permission to do things.
It's the ultimate inversion, as Ayn Rand said. It's the ultimate inversion of rights, which is it used to be that the Constitution was basically saying this is what the government can do and they can do nothing else. But now it's essentially saying this is what the citizens can do and they can do nothing else, which is
right.
Insane.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't understand this court ruling. Like, what did the court ruling say? That you can't download these until we say you can? Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. No, we can download these until you tell us we can't.
Yeah.
Fuck off. That's it. There's nothing else to say. Fuck off. People should have the right to download whatever the... No. Stop that. Not child porn. They should have the right to download most of whatever they want. Just almost
anything
like James Gunn
that
there.
That doesn't violate
careful.
Another person's rights.
Exactly.
But this is what I was saying about... Now I'm going to go back to the James Gunn thing. Like... This is why you know James Gunn is a fucked up person. I would have never thought to put in that caveat because it would have just been like so obvious to me. But I have to now.
Yes.
Because when we let these people rise to cultural significance, we end up with discussions like this where we say, you can't download the plans for 3D guns.
Yeah.
Good. I hope... Why have more people not downloaded this? Because the second this is downloaded, and the second 3D printers exist, and you can 3D print a gun, all gun control laws are moot. This is what I always say about you can't stop technology. We can have all this consternation about should we outlaw guns or not. Release the plans, release the printers, and all the fucking discussion is moot. It's the same thing with abortion, right? You can talk about outlawing it, but as long as the technology exists and it can be done safely and cheaply, you can't outlaw it. It's going to be done.
Release the hounds. William, what the hell? Why all the fear from the politicians over the plastic assault rifles? What's really going on here?
Yeah, this is all about control. And what? It is absolutely about free speech. And to build on Justin's point, this is to point out how absurd our gun laws are now. Even someone like Ben Shapiro, who is definitely a free speech absolutist, he's in Justin's camp of basically child porn is about the only thing, and actual like threats, like in that moment, are the only things that you can really hold someone accountable for. The government can hold someone accountable for.
Well, if you murder someone on tape too, like, I mean, I think that's probably illegal because murder is illegal. Yeah.
So. I agree with that on the free speech side, but yeah, there is a part of the Second Amendment in here. This is pointing out that everything that the government has done is not about restricting gun violence. It's about controlling the citizens when it comes to firearms. The objections people have that aren't just like the knee jerk political objections to 3D printed guns is that they don't have serial numbers. Well, guess what? I already have an AR-15 that doesn't have a serial number because I bought it before that was a requirement. And it's been with me ever since then. It doesn't have a serial number. I constructed it myself. Now, apparently now it's illegal for me to have. I'm supposed to etch a serial number on it because it has to be traceable. Why? Because the government has to trace it. Why? Because somehow that's going to stop a gangbanger from shooting up a neighborhood in LA. It doesn't make any sense to me. Right? This is all about controlling me, the law-abiding citizen, and not about actually reducing violence. That's not the thing that's being discussed. And that's the government's job is not to control the movement of firearms. The role of government is to reduce the amount of violence, right? Here being by protecting their individual rights, by removing violence from the equation. And I don't think this 3D printing thing, it's not that it's new. We've had single-fire 3D printed weapons for a while. Defense Distributed has been one of those companies that has kind of like been pushing the envelope, though, and letting people do things like they can 3D print a plastic lower, which is the most regulated part of the AR-15. And it still is single use or maybe a couple of uses with today's like quote-unquote home 3D printed technology, but my previous employer, SpaceX, they're printing 3D rocket parts out of metal. So this isn't out of the realm of like someone with deeper pockets, right? And the last thing is we had this, like, you know, history is cyclical. We had this fight back when the Anarchist Cookbook was trying to, they were trying to ban that, right? You can build things that are much more deadly just by downloading or buying a copy on Amazon of the Anarchist Cookbook. This is no different than that. Just because people have knowledge doesn't mean they're going to use it for violent ends. And it comes right back to free speech. This is why we have free speech, is because talking about these things and having the designs, for example, are not inherently dangerous. It's who is going to build them and use them, and do we want the government controlling that?
Yeah, to put a...
Wait, I'm going to take you one step further. You said that what was it you said about knowledge that, you know, a lot of people won't or people won't? I'm going to say that most people won't do anything with the knowledge as to how to be violent, because most people, and this is a principle I got from Penn Jillette, most people do not want to harm each other and do not want to do things to get themselves in trouble.
Yeah, right. To put a very fine point on it, both literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of farmers and Tim McVeigh had access to fertilizer and all the chemicals necessary to create a truck bomb. That does not mean we need to outlaw fertilizer or the chemicals needed to make it explosive. It means we need to do a better job of law enforcement and a better job of tracking people like Tim McVeigh or others who would do harm with things like bombs or guns or anything like that, and spend less time regulating law-abiding citizens. The government needs to spend much less time figuring out ways to screw over people who are generally good and do a better job at what they are supposed to do, which is protect us from people who would harm us. That does not mean preemptive laws like banning 3D printed guns or maybe soon just in 3D printers. It means doing a better job at being a law enforcement agency, figuring out how people or the psychology of people who are going to harm us, tracking people with mental issues, tracking people with criminal records, etc., and actually enforcing the laws that exist against, you know, murder and stuff. So, but Justin, yeah, do you think eventually this is just going to lead to the banning of 3D printers? Because there's no way they can control the information.
Yeah, didn't I say that at the top? I mean, that's 100% what this is an overture towards.
Yeah.
They need to control what we have, and the only way to control what we have is to make it so we can't create whatever we want. 3D printers are the next great evolution in human society. You want to talk about the distribution of goods and being able to redistribute goods?
Yeah.
I mean, 3D printers are one step away from replicators in Star Trek.
Yeah.
If you can figure out how to 3D print food, you've revolutionized the world. But even then, without figuring out how to 3D print food, figuring out how to 3D print everything else drastically changes what it means to be a have and a have not. And the government can't have that because they're in the business of being the haves and regulating the haves and the have nots. Yeah. So they can't allow 3D printers. It threatens their very existence as government officials.
It's one of my favorite memes about 3D printers, which is a picture of one, and it just says, capitalism literally giving you the means of production.
Yes.
Which is fucking awesome. I mean, effing right. Awesome.
And just to put a finer point on what you said, a more practical point on what said, look at an equation. You have all of the materials needed to create whatever Timothy McVeigh did, and then you add Timothy McVeigh, and then you have the explosion. What is the unique thing in that equation? Timothy McVeigh. Should we ban everything else, or should we ban Timothy McVeigh? From a purely mathematical, scientific standpoint, you ban the unique thing. The unique thing is ban Timothy McVeigh.
I actually also had
it's not that hard.
A weird moment of realization now, as you said, Timothy McVeigh, that some of our audience members might be so young that they actually don't know who we're talking about.
Yeah.
To be fair, I apparently confused Ted Kaczynski and Timothy McVeigh and didn't even know it. So
Tim McVeigh was the guy who bombed the Oklahoma City building and killed lots
with a
people.
Truck bomb, to be clear. And
with a truck bomb. Yes.
Banned trucks.
Every farmer,
banned trucks.
Every farmer has access to, with materials every farmer has access to, and the recipe for which is in the Anarchist Handbook.
Yes.
Ban visiting the Oklahoma City whatever
Federal
building. Ban that. Yeah. Ban visiting that.
That's right. Oy vey.
Oh, that's the end of the segment.
Thank you. Very smooth. This segment is now ending. The next segment will begin in a moment.
I just shit all over your oy vey joke, too. That was very good.
Thank you.
That was your best dad joke of the episode.
Awesome.
All right. Well, I haven't been able to watch anything, so maybe Daniel has. Let's find out in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Daniel, have you been able to watch anything?
Well, I've had 2 weeks now of on and off sleep, mostly off, and I've had an opportunity to catch up on not a lot of new shows, but a lot of things I've been looking for a long time. So I fired up something I forgot I had, which was an account with Crackle. For any of you who are unfamiliar, it's like Netflix or Hulu. It's owned by Sony. So there are a lot of strange properties on it, and they specialize in a lot of the shows that were canceled in their, like, before they went very, very far I don't know how to say it. Canceled. I don't want to say in their prime. That was what I initially came to, but I don't think they ever reached their prime.
Before they got to syndication.
Yeah, before they got to syndication, before they got big. A lot of Hank Azaria shows that got canceled, for instance. But the one I've been watching, and Crackle is free, by the way. You just have to deal with commercials, which is fine. It feels throwback in a certain sense.
So you don't also have to, there's not like any weird like rules where you also have to sign up for Snap and Pop?
Not that I have yet found, although eating cereal while watching Crackle is a pretty cool experience. So, I've been watching The Critic, which is an animated show starring John Lovitz, written by Mike Reese, who was at that time of Simpsons fame, and also executive produced, or no, a consulting producer on the show was Judd Apatow, funny enough. And the show is about New York film critic Jay Sherman and sort of his tenuous TV career. And it is interesting to watch, one, because it's really well written and funny, and John Lovitz is an incredible talent, but also because you can see in it this sort of development of the meta-narrative and the weird cutaways that Family Guy then eventually perfected and became a master of. But they'll have sort of non-sequiturs, they'll break the fourth wall sometimes, they'll have meta-stories, commentary on the animation or something like that. But all the while, it has this Simpsons-esque charm where the humor is very highbrow and the references. Justin, I think you'll like it purely from the standpoint of it is reference insane. All they're doing throughout the entire episode is making references to classic movies, and you have to have a real breadth of knowledge to understand what the hell they're talking about. Sometimes the references go way over my head. So you'll probably do better with it than I do in most cases, but it's a shame that it was canceled after like two seasons or two and a half seasons or something like that, which actually is fairly long, but it was a show really that launched a lot of the modern adult cartoons that we consider to be really funny today, like Bob's Burgers and Family Guy and things like that. So highly recommend it, and you can check it out for free on Crackle. This episode is not sponsored by Crackle.
Yeah, I was going to say, before you said Bob's Burgers, from the little I've seen of the show, it sort of reminds me of that kind of humor, like the sardonic, the punchlines aren't very obvious. You have to be paying attention and seeing the interplay and the development of the episode to get the punchlines.
Yeah, there's definitely that. There's also a lot of just general, again, like with The Simpsons, where you'll have a highbrow joke, and then the next scene you'll have just a fat slapstick joke or like a, you know, Homer can't fit through a door or something kind of joke. It's a good mixture of those things, which makes it amusing. And John Lovitz,
yeah,
again,
definitely
is just
ahead of its time.
Outstanding.
Yeah, John Lovitz is one of those sort of like Dana Carvey where he disappeared and you're like, where did he go? He was one of the best people.
Yeah. So,
but good to know there's something on Crackle. I thought there are so many of these little mini streaming services that I thought you had to have subscriptions for all of them. I didn't know that they were just commercial based, so that's a good thing to know. Is Crackle the one that also has like all of Saturday Night Live on it?
I don't think so. I think Hulu has the most Saturday Night Live. Crackle does have News Radio on it and a few other.
Oh, and that has John Lovitz too in the last season of it. So there you go, Midsiders. Go on Crackle and watch all of The Critic and News Radio, the best sitcom ever.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff. There's a lot of, like I said, short run shows. Like shows that only ran for like six or seven episodes that they have on there. It's a weird collection of things, but, and they have some original stuff too, which I haven't checked out yet, but anyway, The Critic.
All right. Thanks for that, Daniel. I appreciate you bailing me out, 'cause I really need to get back to the movies, but I'm having anxiety over using my movie pass, 'cause I don't know if I'm going to show up and they're going to be like, for this one time, you have to pay $50 to watch this popular movie. Because they're instituting all these weird fees and everything because they're going bankrupt. So I just have been avoiding going to the movies because of that. I don't want to deal with MoviePass.
Well, you're falling right into their money-making scheme then, which is you pay us and don't go.
Well, I can't
like
let us
leave.
Yeah.
I can't let us leave this segment without at least getting Justin's take on Sir Patrick Stewart joining the Star Trek Discovery debacle.
Didn't we talk about this a few episodes ago, Daniel? We talked about the future of both Star Wars and Star Trek, right?
I think we mentioned that it was a possibility that he was going to be returning, but I guess now it's a definite.
Now it's official.
Confirmed.
Yeah, Comic-Con official.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I tweeted about it, and actually somebody replied to me like I was being serious about social justice. But I tweeted about it, I was basically like, if there was one thing that could happen with all of this anti-white, pro-minority stuff, couldn't we just bring back Sisko instead of Picard? That would be so much more interesting. Sisko's a better captain. Avery Brooks is a better actor. Ooh, I went there. Avery Brooks is an amazing actor. And his character, literally in the finale of DS9, sorry, spoilers out there for a show that ended years ago, but in the finale, it's literally like, I could come back anywhere at any time. You could literally bring Sisko back in any fucking show you wanted, because that was the way his character was written. But in today's day and age, we can't bring him back. Of course, I tweeted that, and I used a bunch of hashtags. And then somebody wrote back to me about how, you know, bringing Patrick Stewart back is just part of the old white man's club. And I was like, Jesus, you fucking people. You can't even tell how I'm not being serious about that. But no, I just, it's not interesting to me. I didn't really love Picard to begin with. I think he's kind of a pussy, especially if we look at Star Trek as more of a relic of the left wing than the right wing. We see how he's sort of like, you know, Riker is toxic masculinity in that show, and they rake Riker over the coals. And Picard's the, you know, he's the French pussy, and we're bringing him back. I don't care. Like, good for Patrick Stewart, but it's just, they're going to shit on what legacy TNG has left and what legacy the show has left. And it's just a reminder to all of us that what they do now can never take away what was done in the past. So even though Justice League didn't finish the trilogy, it cannot take away from the fact that the Batman versus Superman Ultimate Edition and Man of Steel exists. And it's the same thing here. Whatever they're going to do, and it's not going to be good, whatever they're going to do with Picard cannot take away from the later seasons of TNG. It doesn't take away from the best of both worlds. It doesn't take away from Star Trek First Contact. Those will always exist, and we just have to remember that.
Yep, agreed.
I was going to say, he was pretty badass against the Borg.
Yeah, no, the later seasons of TNG are great. And First Contact is still one of my favorite science fiction movies.
Yeah.
All right, you guys want to talk about some upcoming trailers, some upcoming movies?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
As a reminder out there, Midsiders, if you want to know what trailers we're going to talk about on the episodes before you listen to the episodes, just go to the midside.com/podcast and you will see Trailer Takedown on there right now. You can also always just pause the episode now or pause it in between each trailer so you can watch them and have an idea what we're going to talk about.
It's like an interactive media experience.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Operation Finale is about the period between World War II and the Nuremberg trials, where members of the Israeli government, special forces, I'm not really sure, I don't know the history of it, track down Adolf Eichmann and other Nazis in Argentina. It stars Oscar Isaacs. Sorry, I apologize. It's a great actor. I shouldn't have disrespected him in that way. Ben Kingsley and Nick Kroll. So I led with that because it very much confuses me. And I talked about this before, like this idea that when did we start thinking like, oh, just because someone's a comedian or a comedic actor, they can do serious roles. And Nick Kroll was very annoying. I don't even think he's a very good comedic actor. And then they throw him in this movie. To me, that was one of the biggest negatives about this movie. The other big negative for me is, and this is going to sound funny because I'm a Zack Snyder fan, but we'll get to that in a second, actually. It's too dark. It's too dour. Like, I just don't want to deal with this. It's sort of like The Darkest Hour. Like, I appreciate that the movie was made about it, but it was too slow and too just like, it's too dour for me. And it's the same thing here. Like, two great actors, Oscar Isaac, Ben Kingsley. The story is important to tell, but I just, for me, I know the history. I've visited Auschwitz. Do I need to see this with all the things I can engage with in the world? No, I'm not going to watch this. I'm sorry. Maybe that makes me a dilettante or something, but tackle.
Tackle.
Daniel?
Well, one thing I would never call you is a dilettante. It's funny. Maybe a debutante. Okay. I don't know. I had an opposite reaction in a certain sense, which was I finally felt like there was an an interesting original story that was being told here. Even though it's based on a true story, I will take it as it's not based on a book or a comic series or something like that. And the acting in it looks amazing. Ben Kingsley, I don't know, pound for pound, hard to beat Ben Kingsley in terms of actors out there. I know we've been a little more obsessed lately with like the Daniel Day-Lewis's of the world, but Ben Kingsley, man, he's pretty darn good for an actor. So I'm in. I like to see some Nazis go down. Hug.
Yeah, Daniel, I was watching this trailer and I was like, wow, that's really the same guy who played the Mandarin in Iron Man 3.
Yes. That's always what I think of when I think of Ben Kingsley. Not his role as Gandhi, but as the Mandarin. Yeah.
William?
So I know that we've entered the Nazi era, meaning that the only evil bad guys can be Nazis or Russians now, which we'll get into in a second. So part of me is a little bit reserved, but the acting looks so good, so I'm gonna give this a tentative hug.
Second trailer.
Hunter Killer is about an American mission with a submarine. I don't know why it's a submarine. I mean, maybe you guys can talk about that in a second, but a submarine captained by Gerard Butler to save the Russian president from a coup. Now, the first thing that has to be said about this movie is, how did this movie get made? Like, are they just fucking with the left? Like, hey, let's have the American government saving the Russian president in an action movie. Like, isn't this just going to enrage the left? So there's that sort of thing about
it. It's Gerard Butler.
But as far as, well, right. I mean, is he picking right-wing movies at this point?
I think he is.
I don't know if he's doing it just to fuck with people, though, because it's really funny. But, yeah, that's the thing, is it's Gerard Butler. And I like Gerard Butler. And this kind of movie, there's not a lot of, like, intellectual depth to it. But the idea of, like, yeah, we're just going to have an action movie and have an action, a masculine hero, save the day, and blah, 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 like, that's what I want to see nowadays. That's what I want to engage with. That's why I'm, like, excited about all these movies The Rock's in nowadays. But really, I just wish there was a director out there who could balance the intellectual weight of Operation Finale and the kick-ass action and masculinity of Hunter Killer. Like, could you imagine a director like that?
Let me think. Could I imagine Snyder. One? Yes, I think I could imagine one. Yes.
Yeah, both of these trailers just make me yearn for more Zack Snyder movies.
Oh, I thought you meant Michael second Bay.
Oh, yeah, well.
The lens flare is just so deep.
The lens flare is J.J. Abrams. Get it right.
If this was a Michael Bay movie, he would just put a GoPro on the end of the submarine, and that's how the entire movie would be filmed. And you wouldn't actually be able to see anything, because it would just be a shaky mess. But yeah.
Although, by the way, talking about the submarine, I love that last scene, which was just like, yeah, this submarine is a penis, when it came through the crowd, the cloud at the end. I was like, yes, yes.
Man, you love penis almost as much as I do.
Words William rarely gets to say.
That's right.
But no, I am all in for this movie. I would rather watch this movie than the last one, just because I'm going to leave it feeling pumped up. But it is missing. I mean, I acknowledge it is missing a lot of intellectual depth. And if you ever want to see why I love Zack Snyder, it's just watch these first two trailers and imagine they were remixed in a hybrid of each other. And you would understand, because I love this approach of Hunter Killer, but I also love the intellectual depth. Hug. Daniel?
More like intellectual depth charge. Mm-hmm. Boom. Submarine joke. This is not a me movie. This is a FISA movie. To give you a glimpse into our lives, I am Operation Finale, and FISA is Hunter Killer. That is basically how our movie tastes go. I'm sure she'll see this 100 times. She might drag me along once, but I will not go willingly. Not my kind of movie. I do appreciate Gerard Butler. Now, caveat on all this, I say it's not my kind of movie and I don't want to see it, which is exactly what I would have said about Olympus Has Fallen. Is that the name of the movie? And London Has Fallen. And those are actually awesome movies. Again, not a lot of intellectual depth, but enough that it actually does keep you interested in what's going on. So that being said, I will give this a tentative tackle.
Tackle.
Whereas if I get a good report on it, I might see it, but I'm not going to initiate going to see it.
All I just heard and everything you just said is that Isaac is Zack Snyder.
He very well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
William?
I think this has, this hits all my buttons. It's got men in uniform, explosions, some slight political intrigue, guns. This is definitely a movie I want to see. Hug.
Hug.
Giant penis submarine.
Giant penis submarine. You're the one that caught that before I did. Literally.
I rewound that. I was like, wait, did I just see what I thought I saw? I just had to rewind it to make sure that's what they were doing, but that's totally the visual metaphor at the end.
He had to rewind it to get his lotion and a Kleenex.
Yeah, man. Grabbed his towel. Came back.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget to bring a towel.
Mm-hmm.
Final trailer.
Slender Man is about, I don't know. So there was a meme, and it was a stupid meme about like a fake like guy you summoned, and someone was like, let's make a movie about it. And in this movie, like, a girl disappears, and then her friends, who are also three young girls, decide, hey, if we summon Slender Man, which he's summoned like similar to Candyman, except instead of like saying his name three times, there are three bells, and then he shows up and just like hovers around you creepily, and then like uses tentacles to or something. I don't know. Look, the only thing that I can say about this movie is I like that they stuck to their color palette. And I like that they were like, we're going to use this weird gray and black color palette, and they stuck to it. Otherwise, there's nothing unique, nothing worthwhile about this. It's especially hard after you've seen a movie like It, where they actually did a good horror movie, and then you see this. It's just sort of like, there's nothing redeeming about this. Tackle. Daniel?
Justin, damn near stealing my commentary. I was going to say the pitch for this movie was Candyman plus It plus a tiny bit of Stranger Things, all with women. And no to all of that. Tackle.
William?
Yeah, this is definitely knowing your audience if you're a horror person. This is all women. It's basically just a creepypasta story from the internet. At least that's what I gathered from the preview. Story? Yeah, creepypasta. It's like a genre where you kind of just make creepy, random things happen. The end.
Oh.
And it just looks like that. So, yeah, it's girls on phones and trying to find their friend. I mean, it's just, there's nothing in here. Where's the blood? Where's the guts? Where's the guns? Tackle.
Whenever I see a horror trailer like this, I'm always reminded of one of my favorite bits from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where the four of them are forced to awkwardly have dinner together, and they start talking about the roles Sarah Marshall has been in, and they talk about her horror movie she did where the cell phones kill you. And it's just funny the way the guy who's supposed to really like her, Aldous Snow, is like, well, that does sound like a shit movie. And it's just... It's just funny because she's trying to defend it as a career choice, and you could see like one of these girls who are in this movie having to defend this movie one day, and then her boyfriend or future fiance just says, yeah, that was a pretty shit movie, and just her getting really offended by it. Or like, don't they do in The Big Bang Theory too, where Penny does that like the horror movie about like the sentient gorilla or whatever?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, so similar to that.
Looking forward to the sequel to this, Slender Zay.
All right, well, if you think Slender Man is dumb, we've got something else for you. And it's because one of our midsiders out there submitted a dick pic. So DIC, of course, stands for DIC, Dumb Internet Comment. If you have any dick pics out there, send them our way. Remember, it's a dumb internet comment, though. We don't want any of those other dick pics. Although I think one time Midsider Ronnie sent like a picture of Dick Cheney or something to us, which was funny. So Midsider Conrad, That's something I always love to do, where a girl on a dating app would be like, please don't send me a dick pic. And then you send her a picture of like Don Draper as Dick Whitman or something. They never got
picture
it.
Picture of Dick
but
Nixon.
It was funny. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
a picture of his election and button that says, I'm with Dick.
Yeah. Dick Tracy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Midsider Conrad submitted a tweet this week. I'm going to read this tweet to you, and then I think actually, Daniel, because you wear glasses, you might have something to say about this, I think, maybe.
Racist.
This is serious, and again, this is serious. I actually had a conversation with Midsider Michael about this, whether it was serious or not, because Midsider Michael thought it was a joke at first. And I was like, I don't know. So anyway, this is the tweet. If you think about it, people with glasses are literally paying to use their eyes. Capitalism is a bitch. Daniel, you can go first since you have glasses. Are you paying to use your eyes, Daniel?
If you think about it, people with heart defects who pay for the transplant are literally paying to use their heart. Capitalism is a bitch.
People who glasses eat are literally are... paying for their food. Capitalism is a bitch.
Glasses are essentially free. I say that not because I make enough money to live comfortably, but because if you go to Walmart, you can literally get an eye exam and glasses for $100, and they will last you 5 years. Now, divide that, 5 years minimum, by the way. If you want to wear them longer, you can't. It's not recommended. You're supposed to get them every 2 years. There's sort of a little industry thing that might be capitalism is being a bitch to you every two, whatever, but 5 years. Now, divide that by, it's $100, divide that by months, years, days, however you want to do it. Glasses are essentially free. And that is, by the way, thanks to capitalism. That is because when glasses were originally invented, and it's not like glasses grew on trees, and then greedy capitalists went around and picked all the trees or roped off all the glasses groves and now pay people to have access to them where they can get the otherwise free glasses. Someone had to, fucking invent glasses and come up with the idea. And at some point in history, glass was really expensive, so they were not cheap. So they had only rich people could finance them, etc., and research. But eventually, glasses became dirt cheap. And glasses, by the way, which are essentially free anyway, would be virtually free if there was actually less government regulation of optometry. That's right. It used to be. I found this out recently in doing research for a video we're working on. It used to be that optometry became such a commonplace thing that you could have at-home do-it-yourself optometry kits that you could order from the back of magazines. Or even it would say things like, have optometry as a side job. Make some extra money on the side by being your local neighborhood optometrist or whatever. And it wasn't until more government regulation came along and saying, no, you have to be licensed and you have to go in front of the optometry board and it has to be officially this and officially that, that it made optometry more expensive. And by more expensive, I mean essentially free. So that's what I think about that. This woman is clearly insane. And yeah, that's all I got.
Well, I'm really surprised. You went the much more pragmatic route. I mean, to me, this is what the jokes you guys were making at the beginning of the show, or at the beginning, not the show, the beginning of the segment after I read it. It's this whole idea that unless everybody is as able as the most able person, then capitalism is to blame. Isn't that essentially what this tweet is saying?
Yeah.
So unless we're all as tall, fast, strong, attractive, smart as the best person, then it's capitalism's fault. Isn't the idea that capitalism makes it so it's the most efficient system to improve our weaknesses?
Yeah,
I think it's more than that because people who use condoms are literally paying to use their penis as well. So it's not just disability, right? Like it's just like other things that take risks out of your life or add joy to your life.
Yes, and it's basically it's whim worship, right? Which is anything I think about the world, any way I think the world should be, I should be able to have that thing for free. Someone should have to provide that thing to me for free. Otherwise, capitalism is a bitch, as it said here. That is so contra reality. And if we tried to enact socialism, it would be so contra to how the way things actually work. You want to enact socialism where you require glasses to be free, for instance, to anyone with eyes who need them, you're going to have the worst glasses you could possibly conceive of. They will be a one-size-fits-all, and no one will be able to use their eyes. And maybe the egalitarians will finally be happy, if that's the case, but we'll all be happily blind together, apparently.
People with shoes are literally paying to use their feet.
If you think about it. Yeah. Also, by the way,
but they're not.
My glasses...
You can use your feet, and you can use your fucking eyes, and you can use your broken heart, and you can use your penis without a condom. You're still using your penis, you're just not using it the way you want, like Daniel's saying.
Wim worship. Yeah. Yep. And by the way, just to be clear, my glasses... Capitalism isn't just letting me see. Capitalism is letting me see better than people who don't need glasses. With my glasses on, I have 20/15 vision. I have better than perfect vision with my glasses. I am literally a superhuman when I wear my glasses. So, just to
people
be clear
who use toilet paper are literally paying to use their anus.
If you think about it, I like the "if you think about it" before the tweet. Like, it's like when Obama used to say, "Let me be clear," and then he used to say the most unclear piece of nonsense rhetoric you could possibly imagine. If you think about it, here's something that if you thought about it for 10 seconds, you wouldn't actually be thinking about it, because I'm an idiot. Yes. So this is hatred of the good. It's just a weird backwards example of it, but it's whim worship and hatred of the good, and I wish it was a joke, because it would be phenomenal satire. It would just be incredible satire, but unfortunately, she's putting the onion out of business, so...
I mean, isn't that something we said a while ago on the show, that it's becoming increasingly difficult to tell the difference between real statements and satire?
Yeah, you can't satirize social justice because it's becoming so ridiculous. And in fact, that's sort of one of the core premises of the show, right? You can't satirize it, you just have to laugh at it.
Right.
Witness the farce. You just have to sit back and go, "Wow, that's insane." And laugh, because you can't satirize it.
Right, and that's how I am, is I click on this girl's Twitter picture, and I go, "Oh, that's why she's saying that. Capitalism isn't a bitch. You are."
Zing. Mic drop.
What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
Well, I learned that it's good to be back, and to have my white male oppressor opinions shouted into a microphone and sent across the globe in this thing known as the internet, capitalism. Hashtag capitalism is a bitch. But I also learned that I know the lawyer for the 3D printed gun place. I've met him on many occasions. I could call him up right now if I wanted to. I did not know he was the lawyer for the 3D printed gun place, but thanks to this show, I know that. So that's kind of cool.
William?
I learned a new connection between the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, and how 3D printing is going to show the lie of gun control.
Heady stuff. Justin, what did you learn?
I want to learn the connection between the Sixth Amendment and the Ninth Amendment.
Oh, interesting.
I don't even know what those amendments are, but that was a bad joke. No, I learned how to properly witness the farce.
Yeah? How is that?
Well, we just said it. Oh. Rewind it, like hit the back 15-second button on your iPhone there a few times. Do the opposite of what I do during other podcasts to skip the ads. I mean, always listen to the ads, boys and girls.
The Sixth Amendment, by the way, is that people have a right to a speedy public trial and an impartial jury and all that stuff. The Ninth Amendment is the one that's awesome, because it's the one that we literally... Like, people just skip over it now when they're trying to say the government can do whatever it wants, which is the Ninth Amendment was Madison basically saying, and this is what the amendment says, which is like, these list of rights should not be construed as the only rights that people have. We're essentially just listing out the super important ones, but these should not be considered to be a definitive list of your rights.
Right, and that's what we said earlier in the show.
Yeah. Which is awesome.
So I subconsciously made that joke because I'm a genius.
Because Madison, when he was writing the whole thing, was like, "Don't you think people are gonna, you know, think these are the only thing they have a right to?" And people went, "No, no one's that dumb." So
that's where in the sitcom of that they had a smash cut to the year 2018.
Yes, where people are literally eating Tide Pods. Yes. So what did you learn this week, Midsiders? I hope you learned something about the Constitution, maybe, or parenting, or my annoying voice, or whatever it is. Why don't you let us know on social media, at The Midside everywhere, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Vero, where all the social medias can be found. You can also go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the previous episodes of the show, many of which feature me, but the most recent ones do not. So if you're already tired of my dulcet tenor tones, you can go back and listen to some of the episodes from the previous couple weeks where Justin and William did an admirable job without the likes of me. You can also go to themidside.com/store and pick up a shirt, classic logo, Hail Snydra or False Dichotomy Bro shirt. You can go to iTunes and subscribe to get the show delivered to you the moment it's published on Midside Monday. While you're over at iTunes or Google Play, leave us a 5-star review. 5 stars is the way that we shoot up the ladder past Welcome to Night Vale, our new arch enemy.
Careful with the term shoot up.
Oh, yeah. I have to watch my violent, gun-laden rhetoric. Guns. Dangerous.
That's enough to get a warrant for your
goodness gracious. Arrest. Censor myself. Ugh. First Amendment be damned. 5 stars. Even if you hate the show, give us 5 stars and leave us a little comment. We love our reviewers. Thank you so much. Appreciate Liberty.me for syndicating us among the libertarian audiences. What? And, of course, there's Patreon. Patreon.com/themidside. Patreon subscribers help us keep the lights on, help us keep the show going by paying for hosting and things like that, equipment, etc. Basically, if you're not familiar, Patreon allows you to subscribe and give us a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content. So no content, no money. So it's not like a subscription program like Money Pass or whatever, Movie Pass, where you pay and if you don't go. No, no. We don't produce anything, you don't pay. So that's how you keep us honest. We sincerely appreciate
you. Sign up for Discord, where you can participate in our...
That was next.
Well, no, I have something to say with that that you missed over the past couple of weeks because you were busy with your kid, like that's important or something.
Oh, all right. Go ahead, Mr. I have something to say, but like it's my show.
Yeah. I don't have a baby, so this is my baby, so don't take this away from me, okay?
No one puts baby in a corner.
That's right. If you sign up at Patreon, you can donate at the Discord reward level where you can be in our Patreon-only chat in there. And each week, you get to contribute to what trailers we are going to watch that week and discuss. Some of the Midsiders in there have been throwing some great trailers this at us, and we used them the last couple weeks. Happy Time Murders with some Midsider Megan. I believe Operation Finale might have been from her as well, or from Trailer Takedown Dan. So sign up at Patreon for the Discord reward, and you can help contribute to the production of the show.
Also, if there's a movie you think that would make us want to vomit, you can put it in there if you're sadistic, or one we might actually like. Piece of romanticism that we're not aware of, why don't you help us out and nudge that one in there? That'd be great.
They can be old trailers too, like Trailer Takedown Dan wants us to discuss the Star Wars trailer, the original Star Wars trailer. We'll do that at some point.
I bet it's so bad. Trailers were not good for a long time. So if you can't do any of that, if you don't want to be on Patreon, you don't have the money, not a problem. You don't want to subscribe on iTunes, whatever. That's fine. That's your business, man. We're not going to tell you what to do, but we would sincerely appreciate if you tell a friend about the show. That's really how this whole thing works. It doesn't work if you all sit there quietly in your basements and listen to the show. I mean, we like that. Don't get us wrong. But if we want the show to grow, and we all know that growth is living, that living is expanding constantly, moving towards your values, achieving greatness. If you want that to happen for the show, you need to tell your friends about the show, and you need to have them tell their friends about the show, and you see how this works, exponential, etc. So tell a friend, tell a coworker, tell your spouse, tell your dog, tell your new baby. I put the show on for the baby so we can get used to Justin's nasally tones. Just kidding.
Wait. Oh, I was going to say, he's already heard my nasally voice. And that voice is because I'm so pop punk that my vocals are nasally.
That's right. You're just that hardcore about it. Yeah, I've put it on for him. I listened to some of last week's show. I didn't finish it because he threw up and I had to turn it off. And it wasn't because of you that he threw up. It was because of the
rave review. Some bad trailer.
No, it's not because of you. I want to be clear. He also threw up during the Adam Carolla show. So the kid's going to grow up on a steady diet.
So he just has a problem with people like me and Adam? That's what I'm hearing.
Yes, he's going to grow up on a steady diet of the midside and Adam Carolla. So he's going to be wonderful. We are playing Dave Chappelle in the background today while he was there. So lots of his first word is going to be very interesting. we're taking bets on it now. But so thanks, everyone. I really appreciate coming back and having this platform. And until next week, love you much.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
Have a baby.
Three men and a baby.
Oh! Also my wife.